ecumenical religion or church on earth during the tribulation period after the true church is gone. We left off on these seven things about mystical Babylon, mystery Babylon the Great. Her wealth. I just want to say just a little bit more. I was on this coronation of Pope Pius XII, and I had Life magazine, and they played it up with the pictures of the jewels, and I have quite a few pictures of the jewels in the Vatican. And in jewels alone, no talking how much money and gold and all they've got, but in jewels alone, they've got billions and billions of dollars worth of jewels and gold, chalices and gold plates, and besides currency. But in the coronation, the Pope sat on a solid gold. Pope Pius XII sat on a solid gold throne. Solid gold. They didn't even try to give the value of it, but at modern prices of gold, the thing must be worth maybe $100 or $150 million. But anyhow, he had a $500,000 worth of diamonds, rubies, and emeralds in the vest. I mean, in the diadem. 146 jewels in the diadem, with some great big ones. The great big emerald ring on his finger that the cardinals kiss is worth $500,000. The vest that he wore was solid, encrusted with the best pearls, deep sea pearls, worth over $500,000. At the coronation of that pope, 750,000 people had reserved seats at $30 a seat. Plus 2 or 3 other million that paid for cheaper seats, probably only $25. Her wealth is noted here in the text, and we should briefly consider. Notice number 5, her bloodiness, bloodthirstiness, her slaying of the saints of God, as church history very well attests, as in the Inquisitions. All through history, the Waldenses, the Valdenses, the Huguenots, the great Inquisitions, even the settling of America was because of the persecution of all the precious saints in Europe trying to find relief. It's both noted in this chapter and in literal Babylon in the next chapter, the blood of the saints, and we shall consider the text, her bloodthirstiness. As we said before, don't think she's changed her mind about this. If she had absolute sway in America, you'd see a difference in religious liberty that she wants so badly for herself, but not for anybody else. 6, her universality. Over all the kings of the earth, many waters. Verse 15 of chapter 17. Make all nations drunk with the wine of the wrath of her fornication. Verse 18. She reigns over the seven hill city in verse 9 and 18. She has always sought universality. I have a lot more material I'd like to give on each one of these, but look at the increase in America alone. 150 years ago in the United States of America, all the United States were only 33 priests and 55,000 Catholics. They had no buildings at all, no decent buildings, and no acceptance. They had one minor college, and no parochial schools. Now, according to the article in Look magazine by a Catholic, Hartzell Spence, the Catholic Church is three times larger than any other religious body, according to them, in the United States. Now, you have to take their figures a little bit with a grain of salt, sometimes with a whole 100-pound sack of it, but they claim 34 million adherents in the Catholic Church in America. That's a little different from 55,000. With 16,260 parishes, 90 orders of priests, and 276 orders of nuns, 4 cardinals, 33 archbishops, 176 bishops, 20,000 priests. Now, this is a Catholic magazine. Over 20,000 church buildings. And nearly 5,000 private schools. While the population in the United States increased 25% in the last 150 years, the Catholic Church has increased 320%. And a lot more. Yes? They're having problems with modernism and priests leaving the order. But they're still making great inroads in other parts of the world besides the United States. And I think there'll be a switch, not only before the tribulation, I mean after the tribulation comes, but before it, as we approach the coming of our Lord. And of course, under the beast and the false prophet, it will receive the impetus that it's always wanted, for universality. It'll rule over all the kings of the earth. And the very fact that the whore sitteth upon the many waters, and it tells you in the 15th verse what the waters are, and it used that universal expression, peoples, nations, tongues, and tribes, and so on. In other words, there won't be a nation accepted. And then, of course, her end. And you breathe a sigh of relief when this great scarlet woman finds the end of her existence. In 16 and 17, verses 16 and 17, God puts it in the hearts of the 10 kings to destroy this great scarlet woman in 1 hour. The question, why does God destroy his masterpiece? Why does God destroy Mystery Babylon and find all religion centering then in the great city of Babylon rebuilt on the river Euphrates? Well, I believe for one thing, not only does the devil not want mystery worship, he wants personal worship, literal worship, not through an intermediary. Now, that's the primary reason. But there's a secondary one. There is too much Bible in the Catholic Church. And I think if there's one book the devil hates more than any other book on earth, it's this book. I believe the devil doesn't like his masterpiece and will destroy it because it's got too much Bible in it. There's too much truth. Now, it's intermixed with error to ruin the truth, but there's too much truth in the Catholic Church. Did you know they believe practically everything you believe? Plus, a million things you don't believe. They believe that this book is the Word of God. They believe this. They believe that Jesus was God. They believe in his deity. They believe in his humanity. Of course, they believe in the deification of his humanity. That ruins that. They believe in the blood sacrifice of Jesus Christ. Don't kid yourself. They believe in his sacrifice. That's why they turn the wine into his blood every week in the Mass. But you see, the devil doesn't want a religion that teaches the deity of Jesus Christ, the inspiration of the Bible, and the rest. That's why he's going to destroy it. And then he'll be worshipped personally through the Antichrist and the false prophet. Now turn back, or turn with me to the 17th chapter of Revelation, and let's look at the text itself for a few things to bring up as we bring these out, these 7 points. Verse 1, and there came one of the 7 angels which had the 7 bowls and talked with me, saying unto me, come here, and I will show thee the sentence that is executed upon the great whore, or harlot, is the Greek word, that sitteth upon many waters. Quite often God calls either a religion, he called Israel a whore. You read the little book of Hosea, she was an unfaithful wife to him. Committed fornication when she went into idolatry. God called Nineveh a harlot. He called Tyre a harlot. Because this is primarily spiritual adultery, though they've been guilty of literal adultery by the celibacy of the priesthood. Notice verse 2. With whom the kings of the earth have committed fornication, and the inhabitants of the earth have been made drunk with the wine of their fornication. This is said also of literal Babylon in the 51st chapter of Jeremiah. So he carried me away in the spirit. Here's the third time. John is in the spirit. The first time was in 1:10 to see a vision of the glorified Son of God. And then in 4:2 he was in the spirit to see all that we've had up to now. But there is need of a new vision for the end time. And then in 21:10 he'll be in the spirit for the fourth time to see the new Jerusalem coming down from God out of heaven and eternal things. I don't know that we'll get that far or not in our study. So he was carried away in the spirit, in an ecstasy, into the wilderness. And I saw a woman sit upon a scarlet-colored beast. And it refers back to her full of the names of blasphemy. We've considered that. I don't know of very many other names for her that is quite like this one. As accurate as this one, there is no blasphemy too great. The Catholic Church hasn't named it. And appropriated. Having 7 heads and 10 horns. We'll see the beast has these 7 heads and 2 horns. And 7 heads and 10 horns. And the woman was arrayed in purple, here's the wealth of her, and scarlet color, and decked, gilded with gold and precious stones and pearls, having a golden cup in her hand. This cup is the cup of judgment that God mentions throughout the Old Testament. And when it's full, he has to pour it out. Cup in her hand, in her hand, full. As the beast was full of the names of blasphemy, she's full of abomination and filthiness of her fornication. And upon her forehead was a name written. And almost every commentary, I don't care what grade it is, recognizes that in the time that this was written, in the old Roman Empire, the scarlets walked the streets of the cities with their names upon their foreheads. But of course, this one is God's name that he puts upon her. Mystery. And don't lose sight of that word mystery. It shows that this is ecclesiastical Babylon, not literal Babylon. But it is marked that the word mystery is not applied to the Babylon of chapter 18. Others try to make it just the law of recurrence, coming back and God adding some more, but he would have put the word mystery to it. It's literal Babylon in chapter 18 and agrees with the Old Testament. But this is mystery Babylon the Great. And the term that he names her here is remarkable. Mother of harlots. Every false religion on the face of the earth is a daughter of Babylon. Everyone. Idolatry started at the Tower of Babel in the plains of Shinar under Nimrod and his godless wife Semiramis. The first king on earth, according to the Targum, and I guess it's true, ancient, absolutely ancient Jewish writings. Not only did idolatry start here, but nations started here. And so did kings. This probably was the first man to raise an army. And that expression, mighty hunter before the Lord, if you go back and read all the Bible has to say about Nimrod. He was a... there's no idea of him being great in stature. Though one of the words for giant, translated giant, is used concerning him. But he was a mighty man. Evidently a demon-possessed man. Brilliant. But also mighty in deeds. All false religion started at the Tower of Babel and has been associated with Babylon ever since, and comes home to roost in Babylon in the last days, you've seen. In mystery, Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots. Now, not only in this Babylon, but we'll see in the next chapter in literal Babylon, that the blood of all the martyred saints throughout all the ages has laid at the door of Babylon. Everyone. For it is Satan's great masterpiece of religion. And counterfeit. Notice verse 6. And I saw the woman drunken with the blood of the saints. There have been various estimates of how many saints the Catholic Church has killed. There's no way you can possibly know exactly. There were probably several million of them in the Inquisition alone, as they went with plenipotentiary power, not only from the Pope, but from temporal kings as well, to strike from the earth every follower of Jesus Christ, just because they weren't Catholics. Their only crime was they would not join the Catholic Church and renounce their simple faith in Jesus Christ. You go back and read the history of those days. The Catholic Church and even some Protestants have tried their best to divorce papal Rome from pagan Rome. You can't do it. No way. And I saw the woman drunken with the blood of the saints and with the blood of the martyrs of Jesus. Now, she was so beautiful in her appearance, in her wealth, in her greatness, until even John was carried away with admiration. No wonder they'll deceive the very elect if possible. And especially with their counterfeiting, it's so subtle, it's so near. Quoting Bible until even the elect, before the rapture as well as after the rapture, sometimes is carried away with admiration. But notice the angel really rebukes him. When I saw her, I wondered with great admiration. And the angel said unto me, wherefore didst thou marvel? Same word, wonder. I will tell thee the mystery of the woman. And this same mystery, the mystery of the beast that carried her, which had the seven heads and the ten horns. Now, remember, we may have some covering here, but no longer signs or mysteries. The angel's interpretation has to be literal. And we're going to read it very briefly. We've had so much, and only take this woman mostly here. This is that abominable branch of Isaiah 14:18. The beast that thou sawest was, used to live upon the earth when John wrote this, is not now living upon the earth, and shall ascend out of the bottomless pit and go into perdition. It can't be the mission. The emperor was sitting on the throne when John wrote this. We've already seen, and we'll see further, this has to be a former Roman emperor. For he rules in the Seven Hill City. Judas Iscariot never did. Kissinger never did. Some people make Kissinger the Antichrist. Hitler never did. Rosenfeld never did. This man has to be a former Roman emperor. I'm dogmatic on this. Some things I'm not dogmatic about in Revelation, but this one I am. This is the angel's interpretation. As we'll see, just read it again. Here is somebody that the angel says unto John, I'll tell you the mystery of the beast. He's a Roman emperor who used to live upon the earth. We should see him a little later. Not now alive on the earth, but he is alive in the pit. For he shall ascend out of the pit and go into perdition. And they that dwell on the earth shall wonder, whose names are not written in the book of life from the foundation of the world, when they behold the beast that used to be alive, is not right now alive, and yet, and here is a paraphrase of Jehovah, that the Antichrist himself is going to use, who was and is not and yet is. Now here is the mind that hath wisdom. Same thing he said in chapter 13, and that Daniel uses for the same period of time. In other words, the saints shall know who this old boy is as soon as he appears upon the scene. I don't know right now. My candidate is Nero, but I don't know who he'll be in the first half, for he doesn't ascend out of the bottomless pit until the middle of the tribulation period. Keep that in mind. There is somebody, I believe, alive right now in Central Europe. He has to arise out of that place, the ten kings. He might not even be a king now. He might not be a leader. He can't be the head of the Russian Communist Party. He's separated from him. There is a man, though, if we're where I think we are in the plan of God, and of course I could be wrong. The coming of the Lord might not be in my life. Always keep that in mind. The whole thing can change around. Coming Lord might be 100 years away. Don't you ever get any idea? I think so. Of course, I thought 50 years ago he was coming immediately. I still do. Not 50 years ago, but today or tomorrow. But if we're a little ways further away, then all kinds of things could change. But if we are where, in my own mind, I not only think we are, but hope we are, this man's alive. And he is somewhere in Central Europe, or will go there before the time arrives, and will, by some peaceful method, become king of one of the ten kingdoms, the ten toes, or ten horns. Then, by some method, I don't think by arms, For he doesn't receive the kingdom by arms, he obtains it by flattery. He becomes a king or a little emperor over three other kingdoms in the ten. Then, by peaceful means, he becomes president of the common market, if you please, or something like it. And then takes over the kingdoms of the world because he's got the answer to every problem. The whole world hails him as a great man. Now let's look at where he's going to set up his kingdom during that period. Here's the mind which hath wisdom. The seven heads are seven mountains upon which the woman sitteth. That's Rome. The city of Rome. It can't be any other city on earth. I can give you the names of the cities if you want them, or maybe you can find them somewhere else. But it's not only a city, it's a king. In fact, there are seven kings in all, for the eighth one will be of the seven. Verse 10. And these are, the word there should be these are seven kings. Five have met a violent death when the angel says this to Daniel, to John. Five have already met a violent death, fallen. And one is right now upon the Roman throne, ruling from the city of Rome. That's Domitian, the last of the great Caesars, who arrogated themselves absolute divine power. One right now is ruling that, then makes six altogether when John wrote this. And the seventh, the other, is not yet come. But whenever he cometh, he must continue a short space. 7 years in all, but we shall see even that divided into three and a half. Here's the 11th verse. Very cryptic, and very literal, but still cryptic. And the Antichrist, this Therion, this wild beast, this first beast of Revelation 13. So you might as well say Antichrist. And the Antichrist that was, and yet isn't, and yet is, he is an ape. But he's not an ape. If you don't have a death and resurrection, I don't know how in the world you make sense of this. Not every commentary I read that doesn't believe in the death and resurrection stumble bums all over these texts. Don't know what to do with it. For how in the world would you know what he means if he says he's a sixth and he's a seventh and he's an eighth and he's not an eighth, he's a sixth, he's not the sixth, and yet he's a seventh? But you put his death and resurrection from the 13th chapter in that, and it makes good sense. When you get to know that he is assassinated in the middle of the tribulation period as an eighth one, but the spirit then from the abyss comes up and lives in him, who is one of those former Roman emperors. He's of the six. He can be seven, six, seven, and eight all in one. Hence, he is an eight, and he is of the seven, and goeth into perdition. Now, the ten horns. I'm glad that he explained this very good. And it's literal. It's the angel's interpretation. And the ten horns which thou sawest are ten kings. Nothing else. These are not spiritual. They're not symbolical. The angel is telling John exactly what they are. These are ten kings. The same the angel did to Daniel in Daniel 2 and Daniel 7. Especially Daniel 7. Which have received no government or sovereignty or kingdom as yet, but receive authority, exousia, as kings 1 hour with the Antichrist. So, they could change. But evidently, they're going to have quite a bit of power right after the rapture. Sovereignty within the whole Roman Empire revived. And notice they reign contemporaneously with the Antichrist. So that it's in the last half of the tribulation period. They receive authority 1 hour with the beast. And these have one mind and shall give their authority, or their dunamin, their power. It has the idea of their vast ability and strength unto the Antichrist. These shall make war with the Lamb. Now, that's a very important text to remember. And always unite this with 1919. Same thing. And it shows you it's at the Battle of Armageddon. And the law of recurrence. But I draw a lot of other conclusions from this. As we've already taken Gog and Magog, and last year in Prophecy 1. He must be visible over the city of Jerusalem. Well, the Antichrist is not going by this Bible. And if he's going to make war with the Lamb and bring an army as big as what he's going to bring to fill the whole valley from Carmel down to the Dead Sea past Jerusalem,